Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And actually, tonight you will not be listening to Bobby Bell. You'll be listening to Richard Polinelli, who has offered to join us this evening because Bobby called in sick. She just had her second flu shot, and she is feeling under the weather. So we'll have her back on next week. But right now we have my good friend, business partner, and former host of The Writer's Block, Mr. Richard Polinelli. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Jim. As usual, like a bad penny, I'm always turning up.
You know, you just do. I mean, I look at my shoe every now and then, and I see one laying there.
I feel for Bobby because I got the second shot about a month ago, and I thought the arm was going to fall off and the whole thing. So,
Jerry, get well, Bobby. Jerry and I got ours the end of, I think it was the end of March. Mm-hmm. And the only thing we got a little bit of, well, kind of headaches on Saturday. We got them on Friday. But other than that, nothing. Nothing. But they say if you're getting sick, it's because the antibodies are working and you're developing more antibodies. And rah, rah, let's everybody get rid of this COVID crap.
I'm ready for it.
Or as our guest would say, let's get rid of this COVID shit. She's grinning from ear to ear.
60 seconds to the first
four-letter
word.
It's the it is out there. It's the first Thursday of the month, and because it is the first Thursday of the month, we have our very good friend and fellow Westerner, Mr. Henry Park, with us. Good evening, Henry.
Good evening, Jim. Oh, and good evening, Richard.
Good evening, Henry. It's been a while since you and I have been chatting.
It sure has.
Talk to us, Henry. What's going on?
I will tell you, as soon as I get off the phone, I'm posting a brand new Henry's Western Roundup. I don't usually do it on a Thursday night, but I wanted it to be on time for an event that starts today. Actually, I'm an hour late already, which is the annual TCM Classic Film Festival.
That's right.
And, due to COVID, for the second year in a row, it's a virtual event. This time, they've partnered with HBO Max, so there are plenty of events on both venues. HBO Max is doing it as a hub, so you can see their offerings anytime during the festival. In fact, anytime during the month of May. And I'm delighted to say that the festival is opening with a Western.
It's called
West Side Story.
Clever use of words.
I haven't actually seen it, but Jim assures me it's a great horse opera.
Oh, well, okay. Do they sing?
Of course, sometimes you lie to me.
Oh,
well, seriously, for the event, TCM has reunited Rita Moreno, who did a lot of Western TV, often playing an Indian, George Chakiris, and Russ Tamblyn, who, of course, starred not only in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, but the spaghetti Western Son of a Gunfighter.
Wow.
Yeah. The lineup in general is very good, although very light on the Western sagas. Friday morning at 8:45 Pacific time, they're premiering a 4K restoration of Irving Berlin's Annie Get Your Gun from the original nitrate Technicolor negative. Saturday morning at 7, it's arguably Sam Peckinpah's finest film, Ride the High Country, starring Randolph Scott, Joel McRae, and introducing Marriott Hartley. Which reminds me, did you know Marriott Hartley was such a good discovery that two great filmmakers introduced her?
I knew that she was introduced on Ride the High Country, but I didn't
know that. That's right.
Okay.
Two years later, when Alfred Hitchcock did Marnie, it again said, and introducing, because he wanted to introduce her.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Good for Alfred.
Absolutely. Good.
Two years too late.
Although he never did a Western. Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Well, back to the festival, HBO Max will be featuring John Ford's The Searchers, including a discussion of the film by Ben Mankiewicz and Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, the late 1980s and early 90s saw a pair of landmark game-changing Westerns, Young Guns and Young Guns 2, featuring the exploits of Billy the Kid and his compatriots, starring Emilio Estevez, Kiefer Sutherland, Lou Diamond Phillips, Charlie Sheen, Christian Slater. Well, there's going to be a third film after all these years. Guns 3. Yeah, Guns 3, alias Billy the Kid. They're leaving the young out of this one.
Yeah.
Emilio Estevez will direct and star, and John Fusco, who wrote the first two, is typing away even as we speak. I tried to get John to tell me a little about the plot, but he told me he can't discuss it until some rights issues are ironed out. I don't know about you. I'm going to have to watch the originals again to figure out which stars can come back, because a lot of characters got killed off.
Well, Billy the Kid was one of them, so how does he come back?
Well, he's back in the second one, and I think they like take it into the Great Depression or something, because it wasn't really him that died. Maybe they can do that with everyone. We can get Lou Diamond Roberts. Phillips back.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's a surprise. There's a second Billy the Kid project in the works. The Epix channel has ordered an 8-episode limited series from English writer-producer Michael Hurst, who's previously done The Tudors and Vikings.
And
he's got an interesting take on it. He's approaching it as an Irish immigrant story. Billy was born in New York City, but his parents were just off the boat Irish immigrants. So, different
that
approach.
Could be.
Yeah. Now, a couple of months ago, I told you about a new series on INSP, Wild West Chronicles. It's now the highest rated new series ever on INSP. And I had a great talk with the show's two producers about what started as a fairly standard Talking Heads documentary series and morphed into a fact-based historical drama more akin to like Zane Grey Theater or Death Valley days. In each episode, Matt Masterson, who really did become a journalist after he was a lawman, investigates real events in Western history. This Sunday night's premiere episode is Matt Masterson and the Dodge City Deadline Part 1. It's about the murder of entertainer Dora Hand, in which Matt Masterson and Bill Tillman were members of the posse.
Right.
And please check out the May issue of True West on newsstands now. It features my interview with author Paulette Giles, whose News of the World is the basis for what many consider the best film of the year. And you can read about all this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Quick question, Henry.
You bet.
A bit of trivia for you.
Please.
What was one of the first movies that George Chakiris did?
You know, the first thing I saw him in was, what is the Marilyn Monroe thing where she sings Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend? That's the earliest thing I know.
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Right.
I think though it was before that, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was White Christmas. He was one of the dancers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
Yes, he was. Huh. In two sequences. He was during the Mandy sequence, which is the big production number, and when Rosemary Clooney did her solo at the nightclub, when she left them high and dry. Oh, I'm being applauded. Thanks for the clap.
Well done.
Thank you so much, Henry. We'll be talking to you in June.
I'm looking forward to it. Have a great show, folks.
Okay, you have a fun time, Henry.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We have tonight with us an author of, I think, probably unequaled horror. And I want it two R's and an O-R because, when I was a kid, we used to do the House of Horrors in our garage at Halloween. And my father said, you may want to change the name of that. So I have to always now pronounce the word horror. She is an author of, oh my gosh. Richard and I read the book and we both came up with the same thing. It was very dark. and quite interesting, I have to say. I had not read a book like this in quite a few years, not since I think it was a book called Ghost Story years back, which was really a great. Oh, you know it. Well, please, let's welcome to the writer's block a great writer, a partner in my in Mickey Mickelson's Creative Edge. She's also a client, as is Richard and myself. Please welcome to the writer's block Jennifer Ann Gordon.
Hey, thank you so much.
Oh, man, wait, it's so nice to have you.
Thank you for having me. I just like fangirled out when you said Ghost Story because that is equally in my top five of my ultimate horror novels.
Isn't
ultimate
that just ghost the best stories. Book?
It's one of the few books that's horror or ghost story. Horror, I'm going to try to say it equally as well as you did, that scares me more every time I read it.
It does. It does. It's just a phenomenal book. And they actually made a movie out of it.
Yes, I remember seeing it when I was a kid because it stars Fred Astaire.
Yes, yes. And the movie was pretty good too. So, I mean, you have to say, you know, it takes a good base to make a good movie.
Yeah, and that movie was very good. And it was, and this is going to be gross for your listeners and gross for me. First time I ever saw a male penis was in that movie because there is a very quick scene where somebody.
Yep.
You know, spoiler alert, something happens and you see a male penis. And as a child, when I saw it, I was like, what the heck is that? What is happening there? So, you know, that's one of my early introductions to horror.
Horror. Oh, actually, you know, that's okay, Jennifer. Penis is a five-letter word. It means definition in Webster's is male appendage.
Yes. So it's a fine word to say. It's not a swear word.
That's
I'm not swearing yet.
It's to be used for the other four-letter word.
Which I'm going to try not to say.
So anyway, the name of this book that we read, and I have to say I have thoroughly enjoyed it, is Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent. And I understand now the title, and I'm sure that that title did not come up until you were pretty much most of the way through the book.
Actually, so a lot of the – there is a character, as you know, as you both know, is a ghost, and she is throughout the entire book. And a lot of her language, a lot of the way she expresses herself, a lot of the parts that she is in the book is written in free verse poetry or blank verse poetry.
Correct.
And the title, Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, was actually – part of a poem I wrote many years before, and a lot of the, which in, is how it shaped the I'm sorry, I don't want a name dropper, the ghost, I must set her name. A lot of my poetry that I had been writing for years shaped who that character was. So that line was part of a poem that ended up in the book.
Well, we don't like to say that the name that you gave this female ghost really fit.
That's
the
only reason why I don't want to say her name, because she doesn't say it until like halfway through.
And she doesn't say it. Other people call her this name, but she never says it herself, which is it's really, and she drags around this wet dress. The story itself is so good.
Well, thank you.
And when we talked the other night on Tuesday night, my comment to you is when I first started reading the book, I thought she was a succubus, and she said, nope. Keep reading.
Yeah. And, I mean, and you weren't totally off base.
No, I wasn't.
Because, but
I was close.
But no, you were close.
But, I was close, but no cigar.
Yeah, that's why I was just like, in a way, she's a succubus, but no.
You know, I really hate not getting the cigar. I really do, and it's just, I mean, you stole the cigar from me, Jennifer. You took it.
I know. I have to say, I am proud of myself for the fact that I've had a lot of people who've read this book who are huge ghost and horror lovers. And so many people were like, oh, I thought I knew where you were going with this. And then at the end, you stuck a knife in all of my parts.
Well, when Richard and I were talking this afternoon about this particular book, and then I'm gonna give you a chance to kind of give us a rundown. Oh, well, you know what? Let's come back after the break. And oh, good girl, she's sitting there drinking. I love that. We'll be back. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we will return right after a real short word from LA Talk Radio.
Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says be a host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say. And if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com. And listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back. We're back with our guest, and that would be Jennifer Ann Gordon, and of course my just favorite co-host, Mr. Richard Polinelli. And we were talking about, oh, if you want to call and talk to Jennifer, actually there's a number. You can call 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. Richard and I were talking this afternoon, as we do every Thursday, about your book. And my comment was, you know, it just kind of was broken up a lot. But then at the end of the book, I understood why. And it all comes together, the last two chapters of the book. And I'm going to give you an opportunity now, Jennifer, to kind of give us a brief synopsis of what this book is about.
Okay. I will try to be as brief as I possibly can. Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent is a story at its heart about grief, about regret, about rage, and about fear. So it follows my main character, Adam, who is an alcoholic who has recently lost his wife and his very young son in an automobile accident that he feels responsible for. Whether he is responsible for that or not, that's yet to be determined. So Adam is overcome with grief. He has no psychological wheelhouse from his upbringing to be able to cope with pain like this. He has had childhood trauma. So he experiences this incredible loss, and he tries to find solace in AA, and he tries to find solace in grief groups. And it's not until he hears the rumor of an island off the coast of Maine, which is presumed to be haunted, where if you can go there and if you want it bad enough, you can be reunited with the person or persons you love the most, the persons or persons you need to connect with the most. So he travels to this island off the coast of Maine, basically to reconnect with the ghost of his 4-year-old son, Ben, who is the best thing that has ever happened in his life. So he gets to this island off the coast of Maine, and he's staying in this boarding house. And he happens to be staying in a place that is incredibly haunted by a woman who was murdered 60 years ago. And she has spent the past 60 years haunting the man who killed her. And these three characters, the ghost, Anthony, who's the murderer, who's now 82 years old and has dementia and probably lung cancer, and Adam sort of combined together in this trifecta of just loss, and trifecta of being haunted by your past, and this trifecta of not being able to let something go that maybe you should have let go. And that's for all three of them. So I've called it a menage a grief. It's, you know, it's not a love story, but there is love in there. It is very much a story of what happens when you're grieving the life you could have had, the life you lived, when you're regretting your decisions, and all of that just like gets compounded over time. So it's the feel good story of 2020 and 2021.
Okay. I'll buy that, Richard.
Super uplifting.
I know you've got a comment.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, first off, any book that starts with a pull quote from a Gordon Lightfoot song, especially the one you used, is an automatic 6 stars in my book. So you're already starting way up here.
Song like rips my heart out every time I hear it.
And it was very.
It's perfect.
Yeah, it was.
I love that song.
Um, But what I noticed about this is that the three main characters and pretty much everybody who shows up in this book at some point or another is a very flawed, very broken person. In different ways. I mean, even the bartender that Adam reaches out to.
Yes.
He thinks she's his last anchor to the living world. And when he calls to her, she doesn't know who he is, right? So
of course she doesn't.
Right. You know, so she's completely, so you've got all these people who are just broken up, and yet you walk us through this, their story, and there's a character arc, even for the ghost.
Yeah,
we get a character arc for the ghost. So we're learning more about these characters and understanding that it's not a black and white, you know, good, evil. There's different parts to what made them get to this point where we're reading about them now.
Right.
And you did that so well. I mean, that kept me turning, because usually when I read a book for this show, I do it over 2 days. And I got the call that I was going to be on tonight. So I got the book, I think yesterday at about yesterday at 3 o'clock, and I finished it yesterday at 7:30.
Yeah. It's
normally, I don't do that. So it was a great, and you did a great job of just laying everything out.
Thank you. And I know it's a tricky book because it's three different points of view. It's,
right.
You know, an elderly man. It's a man in his 30s who might or might not be crazy. It's a ghost who speaks in poetry. So three different point of views is not most people's like cup of tea. Like, this is the book I want to read. But I everybody who reads it, I just say, like, trust in it. Because by the time you get to the end, if you get to the end, because I know people don't, and that's fine. But if you get to the end, like, I promise it's worth the awards it's won.
Oh, truly.
I don't want to be like smug, but
truly,
I feel like I created something that was very unique. And
oh my
I'm
God.
So proud of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I have to tell you that for the last quarter of the book, I kept thinking, now, why did Anthony kill her? Why did he kill her? And then when you get to the point where she's recalling being killed, my mouth dropped open and I said, I just thought to myself, holy crap. you think these characters are an awful lot alike, but then you discover that they've been together for 60 years, all of them.
Yeah.
All of them. And it's just, whoa. I mean, what a great turn. That's a great twist.
You. I know. It's like, it's a twist, but it's not. So, like, I understand, like, I hate to do, like, spoiler alert, but there's a thing called fate that we all kind of have. And maybe even the worst things in our life, including our 60 years before the book starts, fated to happen for a reason.
Sure.
And that reason in this book may or may not be, like, an awesome thing.
And it was interesting.
Not,
but. Yeah, it was interesting that we have things that are happening from the ghost's point of view in her future before she dies.
Right.
Yeah.
That she is somehow connecting to and seeing and connecting to the people involved in them, even though it's still 60 years away, and knowing what she has to do to get there. And goes ahead. And I mean, how many people would go ahead and know, if I do this, this is going to happen to me? And they go ahead and do it.
So, yeah. Like, it's not really a spoiler to say, like, she understands she's going to be murdered, and mm-hmm. she allows herself to be murdered for a very weirdly specific reason.
Exactly. That, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a weird place to write from. I won't lie. Because I'm a Cancer. So when all of a sudden I was just like, oh, she knew what was going to happen. And I thought, I can't write that, can I? And I'm like screaming at my computer and typing at the same time.
Yeah, it was a tremendous story. I just enjoyed the hell out of it. I started reading it Monday. I talked to you Tuesday, and I didn't pick it up again until yesterday afternoon.
Yes.
And finished it about 2:30 this afternoon. So.
Oh. So you're still fresh.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally fresh.
The trauma. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Well, there's no trauma. I mean, it didn't happen to me, so, you know. But I really like the book. I really truly did. And I will give it 5 stars.
Oh, well, I love to hear that. Oh.
Only 5?
Huh?
On a scale 5? Of what?
Like, well, you can only give 5 stars, Richard.
I give 6. We're lucky if we I get, tell no, Amazon we did, to go away.
We did 5 stars, so we have to. Richard and I wrote a book together. Neither one of us had ever done it before, and it turned out pretty good. And you can't tell where one quit writing and the other one started.
So I love that.
So, but we got 5 stars in our book. It's a Western called The Last Lonely Trail.
I will check it out.
Well, you don't have to if you don't like Westerns. No biggie, but.
You know, I'm hit or miss with Westerns. I won't lie to you.
No ghosts, but we do have inventive death scenes in our book.
Then you have me there. Like, I love a good inventive murder.
We have a few.
Yeah, we got a couple. And actually, my last book, Jefferson's Chance, has got some pretty good deaths in it, too. So, you know,
It makes me seem weird to be like, how good are your deaths in your book? Like, is it interesting? I'll read any interesting death.
Back in the 1870s and 1880s, deaths were not easy. They were not fun.
No. And I think even now, I mean, now we have guns, we've got big weapons. But if you, like, I think a weird murder of passion that you're not expecting to kill somebody is still difficult to do.
Well, maybe, yeah.
You know, I would like to think that, I guess, that it's difficult to just kill somebody if you haven't planned it.
I dare anybody to top having somebody's brain branded.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, a cross.
With a cross.
Ooh, like on a rosary?
No, just bullets.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen anybody top that one yet, so we'll see.
So, you know, where did this story come from?
So, honestly, probably about 20 years ago, I was in school for theater, and I was friends with performers, and I was friends with other writers, and I got it in my head that I wanted to write a play. And I was talking to a friend of mine who literally just told me the story that was, oh, my grandfather or my uncle, it was something random. Like my uncle was a cop and his partner murdered his fiance the night before they got married and everybody covered it up and he just got away with it for his whole life. So it was that moment that Anthony and my ghost were born. Because I thought, what would happen if you, and Anthony in my book is not a cop, it has nothing to do with law enforcement, but I just thought, like, what happened if, and you got away with it, and nobody thought you killed them at all, but that ghost haunted you every moment of your life until then. So that was my core story, and I thought, at that point in time, 20 years ago, that the Adam character was just kind of the character to propel this story. He was going to be like a young neighbor kid. In my original vision, it was like an apartment building. And, you know, that none of it made sense. And I realized trying to write this play that I couldn't do the justice to my ghost that I wanted to, because I had no money and no experience of doing lighting or makeup or sound. So, I mean, I could probably write the story and I could probably like find actors to be in the story, but it wouldn't inhabit it. So that was 20 years ago. The idea was born. About 10 years after that, I thought it would be a good graphic novel and I storyboarded out the first portion of it. And still at this point, the Adam character was barely in it. I kept thinking it was a story about Anthony and the ghost, the murderer and the murdered. But then that didn't work out, the graphic novel. And a few years ago, I was plotting out a different book that I was just like really bogged down in the research because it was the Victorian era. And my now husband just kept saying, why don't you write that story you keep talking about? And I said, well, I don't know if it's a book. Like, I don't know what it is. And he's like, well, just like write it. It could be a short story, just like write it, get it out. It'll be an exercise. And I said, okay, I'll try writing it. And for some reason, Adam was the first character that came out, like unknowing in my brain, because I had not developed him at all until I started typing him. And that's how Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent happened. So it took, you know, 20 years and 6 months. Like 20 years of it being in my head in all of the wrong ways. And then 6 months to write it. And I guess I think it failed every time because I kept having the wrong lead character.
I think that happened. I mean, you know, I'm a pantser as well, and I have to backtrack occasionally and
yes,
try to figure out where the hell I'm going with this. And but then the character takes hold and they go, well, no, this is where you got to go because this is what I would do.
Yeah.
And you know, we've talked to writers. They go, characters do not talk to you. Yes, oh, they do.
They scream
oh,
at
yes,
you.
Yes, they do. And if you're not doing what they want, they scream at you.
They do. I remember writing Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, and there's a moment, hashtag spoiler alert, where Adam buys OxyContin.
Right.
And that was never part of my wheelhouse. And then he does it, and I screamed. I typed it, and I screamed. I screamed at my computer. I screamed at my hands. And my husband burst into our bedroom thinking that I saw a spider. And I was like screaming in a kind of in tears. And he said, what's going on? And I said, Adam just made the worst decision of his life. And my husband, Roman, said, well, you can delete it. And I said, no. I can't delete it. It's happened. It just happened.
Exactly.
He's like, but you wrote it. And I'm like, I can't delete it. And it exactly. changed the course of the story.
Exactly. Hey, hang tough for a minute. Richard, would you like to do a little blurb for our Tuscany Bay book thingy, Bobber?
I will see if my memory is any good and give it a shot here. We're going to do cold.
Put the advertising the book on the show.
Okay, if you are a author and you have a book that you would like over 600,000 people to hear about, we have an offer for you. Contact Jim at jimchristina@yahoo.com and let him know what your book is. Give us about a 30-to-40-second blurb describing your book in your words. Remember, you're pitching this to 600,000 people, so make sure it's saying what you want. And we'll get it on the air for you.
Yep.
All you got to do is just drop us a line. Again, it's jimchristina@ yahoo.com because right. I'm not sure if which one would be working better, but we'll go with
PayPal.
That.
We want you to pay by PayPal and use jchristina@TuscanyBayBooks.
And the cost, I guess I should mention that, is only $25. And you can go for 1 week or as many weeks as you want. And like I said, you got a chance to get your book in front of 600,000 people.
Yeah.
So don't miss out.
Yeah. If make sure that we have, I would say probably between less than a minute, less than 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. And make sure that we have all your contact information and everything because we will read it on the show and it'll be done. Your commercials will be done live. So, all the foibles on live radio included. So. But for $25, I mean, that's a good deal. You're getting the book out to a lot of different folks. And we have a lot of different genres listening to this program. So it's a good deal for everybody. And Jennifer, I know you're going to be interested. No, you're not. We just did your book.
I know. But had you not done my book, I would be interested in that, especially because I saw how delicately you both said horror.
Horror. That is correct. Horror.
So that's I respected
better
that.
Better than Whorehouse. You know, changed the name.
I grew up in New England. I still live here, and it can be a little bit conservative. And anytime I say I write horror, people are like, "You write horror books?" I'm like, not really horror books, but horror, and then like I just like overly emphasize it. And my mom's first language is not English, so when she says horror, she says haro, and I'm like, that's not right either. So every time I say it, I try to be very, I sound like Winona Ryder, like overemphasizing my R's on Stranger Things. Horror.
Oh, yeah. Great show, incidentally.
It is a great show.
Yeah, for sure.
Love Winona. So.
Now, speaking of horror,
I want to jump in on this because there's something I noticed.
Uh-oh.
In a lot of the movies and a lot of the books today in that genre.
Okay.
It seems to me there's a lot of blood and gore for the sake of blood and gore.
Oh, yeah.
And you didn't go that route. And I think to me that makes for a much better story because you're letting the reader's imagination fill in some of the blanks and imagine exactly what is going on. And that just is going to draw the reader in more as opposed to showing them everything and making it over the top. So I did want to compliment you on that because those are the kind of stories in that genre that I prefer.
I appreciate that so much. I love blood and gore. I won't lie to you. But I really also love using my imagination to fill in the blood and gore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we as readers and just we as humans, we're going to fill in what scares us the most automatically. Right.
Exactly. Our brain will do that for us.
Yeah. So if I tell people what scares me exactly, then it's on the page.
Right.
If somebody's like, oh, well, I'm not scared of crabs, like the way they sidewalk.
Right.
Then they're going to be scared in my book. But if I, you know, allude to something, skittering on the back of the teeth, a creepingness, then people can fill in whatever they want that to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, I appreciate the fact that, because I don't like to do great big descriptive paragraphs or pages of characters either, because the reader is going to have their own idea what this person looks like.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter if you describe it or not. If you describe them, then the reader is fighting with that description because that's not what he sees. So if you just give, you know, okay, he's got a scar on his right cheek. His hair is receding. He's got a big mustache that rolls down under his chin. Okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
He's dressing in range clothing. Pretty much everybody knows what that is. So just let it go from there. Now he has actions, different story.
Yeah.
You know, that gives you more of an idea what this guy looks like and what he is.
His actions, his emotions, like his backstory.
Right.
I know and this is probably me being like a narcissist or like a theater performer, but I want to be the lead character in every book I read. I don't care if that's a male character or a female character, but when they're described so specifically that I can't play that role. Like, she's a 6'2", willowy blonde. I'm like, I can never be that. I can never be this character. So I love descriptions, but I think they need to be, for me, general enough that every person could read my book and be any of the characters they want.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If I describe something in a specific way, like my character Adam in Beautiful, Frightening, Silent, he's very tall, he's very slender, but there was like a reason for that because you have to like understand his uncomfort at being so slender now, because he's very thin. So for that, I described him so people could get that kind of.
Well, I will tell you who I pictured as Adam, Anthony Perkins.
Oh, that's a good one. I picture a very skinny Adam Driver, but an Anthony Perkins is so good.
Yeah, he was Anthony Perkins was, and Anthony, for sure. Anthony was like a Sean Connery,
with Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins was the other one.
He could be an Anthony Hopkins. He's also a what is his name? Brian.
Brian Cranston?
No. Brian Dennehy.
Brian Dennehy, okay.
Brian Dennehy was in my brain, but Anthony Hopkins, I was like, a two on point because I'm calling him Anthony, but also perfect. But yeah, Adam was named Adam because of like weird Catholic biblical reasons, but a very skinny Adam Driver. Like when Adam Driver was in the movie Silence, when he lost all that weight to play a Portuguese priest, that's the version.
Oh, wasn't that a great movie?
So good.
Oh,
so freaking good.
I know.
Beautifully shot. Every bit of that, I would just like, I'm a movie dork. So every once in a while you see a movie that you're just like, well, that's perfect. Like, F you, Martin Scorsese. You still have it. Like, you want him to not have it, but he still has it.
There you go. What is... the name of this show, of course, is The Writer's Block. And the question usually is, have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it? And if you haven't, hooray for you.
Yeah. Hooray for anybody who hasn't had it. I don't really believe in writer's block per se. I do believe in story block. Like, you can be writing a book or a story that you're just not ready to go there yet. That I fully believe in. When that has happened to me, and when that happens, I just free write. I take a few classes a week, a few writing classes a week, just to like be with writers and talk about writing. But just like a 14, 17, 12 minute free write with a prompt that you have no idea what it even is going to mean to you, unblocks almost anything. Like, and there's websites you can go on for like writing prompts, like random writing prompts or random first lines to a story. So I think if people are blocked writing wise, go on one of those sites, set your phone alarm for a random time, 12 minutes. It doesn't need to be long. Look at a random first line for a story and give yourself 12 minutes and don't edit. Don't go back and read it over. Just word vomit. Just get it out. And honestly, it just like does wonders for believing in your own creativity again.
Huh. Let me give you the first paragraph of a story, a book that I'm writing right now. And yeah, the 21st, we're going to do the open reading for Mickey on his.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, are you included in that?
Okay. I am. I didn't know I was until I saw the list.
There you go.
Well, I better check.
This is something that's going to be with Mickey, but I really like this. I read it to Richard today, and he liked it too. This is actually the start of chapter 2 in this book. Jonas Bennett could have been a model citizen, raised in the Mormon faith and brought up to believe in Jesus Christ and the gospel teachings of Joseph Smith, but Jonas was an asshole. The road he took at 16 years of age forever marked his path, with a number of nefarious bands, ruffians, outlaws, highwaymen, and brigands populating Texas in the 1860s and 1870s. And that's it.
Well, I love the use of the word asshole. Also brigands.
Yeah.
No, it's good. Yeah, I like that you took us on a little journey there.
It's a little description of this guy. Now, I don't show you, don't tell you what he looks like.
No, but I saw him in my head.
Yeah. The guy's he's a cocky little asshole.
He was.
And they call him the smiling bandit because that's what he does. And he smiles the biggest when he's going to shoot somebody.
Well, I feel like a smiling bandit is, I hate to say it, a lot of our weaknesses.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Richard, your turn.
I just want to jump. No, it's okay. We adopted two puppies and they've got their nightly WWE match going on up there. So I was checking to make sure everything's okay. I want to get back one thing on the book, the way it ends.
Oh, gosh.
Is there a sequel? will come in? Because if not, you and I are going to talk after the show.
You've
set it up for it.
Yeah, you definitely set it up.
I did set it up for something. There is not a sequel in the works.
Okay.
But that being said, what is in the back of my mind at some point is a collection of stories that take place on this Dagger Island, because I also wrote two other books that take place on Dagger Island. And the way I end things is not something that I think a lot of people are like, they love it, but at the same time, every book I've ever written and every story I've ever done, people say, where is the sequel? And I'm like, there is no sequel. That is that. And I love a vague ending. I promise everybody who reads the book that there will be more at some point in time.
Okay, good enough.
It's not a novel, but I have a collection of, and then what happens? Short stories that eventually will be written or released at some, even if it's just released for free for people.
Well, you've got a big question mark hanging over one of the characters at the end.
Right.
Hey, I think everyone at the end.
Well, no, I mean the
I know who
you're not giving spoilers. Yeah, I think you know
right.
Who
talking
I do.
About. Yeah.
I know.
We have to take another real quick break, guys. Hang tough. Jennifer, don't go anywhere. And we'll be back. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. We'll be back with you just after a real short word from Creative Edge.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge. Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
So Jennifer, I want to warn you. I got to warn you. I got to do this. 4 years ago, I wrote a book, Escaping Infinity, and it was a standalone. And I kept telling everybody, it's a standalone. I'm not doing a sequel. I don't have to. Everything was wrapped up. The sequel comes out at the end of this year.
Yeah.
So you will do a sequel, whether you think you aren't, but you're going to. I can tell.
I'm sure I will. And I just want to frame it for people like under. It'll be like under the Dagger Island umbrella but I haven't forgotten these characters. I think about them probably more than I should for like a healthy, normal human brain, but I think about them a lot and I know their story's not necessarily done. I love my ending of Beautiful, Frightening and Silent, but
it's
I know.
It's a great ending. It's a great ending.
I did a live book club right before the entire world shut down in COVID, and I had 10 women going. But what about the character that I know you're thinking of? And I said, well, what about that character?
That character.
And they were just like, what does that mean? And then I said, why don't you tell me what it means? And then they all poured glasses of wine. And what was amazing is every single one of them told me something so bonkers different than I ever thought. Mm-hmm. And I love that even more. I was like, this is why I didn't a vague ending, because you each came to a really amazing conclusion that I didn't write. And it's not the conclusion in my head. And I loved all of them.
The conclusion I came to was that they were going to become a family like Topper. Remember the... The ghosts.
Yes.
The husband and wife ghosts and their dog.
Yeah. So like that, except not.
Well, yeah. I didn't think so, but I mean, you know.
So it's somewhere between there and the move and the play No Exit by Jean-Paul Sartre, which his whole thing is hell is other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's usually three people trapped in a room and what can happen.
Well, you know, I hate to do this, but we are out of time.
That is okay. You guys have been amazing.
Stick around with after the show because we can have a little chat for a few minutes before you take off. If you wouldn't mind, though, tell our audience where they can find you, email address, website.
Oh, yeah. My website's the easiest place to find me, and that is www.jenniferanngordon.com, and that's A-N-N-E, like Anne of Green Gables. So that website has my email address. It has my podcast. It has links to all of my books. Also my social media. I love benevolent, nice stalking. If you send me gross things, I will block you immediately.
Good girl.
Thank you, world.
Well, we want to thank you, Jennifer, for agreeing to join us tonight. I know you're off there in the wilds of New Hampshire.
Yes.
Wherever. And It's late at night here. It's late there, and it's not here, but then we're in mountain time. So
yep,
the same as our publicist. At any rate, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real hoot, and we just didn't have enough time. And get a hold of when your next book comes out, get a hold of the bookie. We'll get you rebooked on the show.
Yes, we'll get to July 13th. And,
oh, there you go. Okay. Again, right. Thank you so much for Jennifer Ann Gordon. And her book, of course, is Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent. And it's available everywhere, even from her website. So make sure you pick up a copy. You will not be disappointed if you like ghosty stuff. It's a lot of fun. And with that, and for Richard, thank you for joining us. For Bobby,
always a pleasure.
For, of course, Ronan, our engineer, and Sam, the owner of the station, and everybody involved, and the bookie included. Thanks for joining us, and we are out of here. Don't go away.
You stay.